From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 20th day of July, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Michael Cordonnier of Soybean and Corn Advisor. Jackie Vakes is out of the office today. A bit later in the program, we'll take up the weather forecast from Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And along the way, we'll hear from Greg Johnson at TGM Total Grain Marketing about the cash grain situation on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Oh, the moon was shining bright along the
Our program today is dedicated in remembrance of Kay Whitlock. Kay was a fantastic grain merchandiser from Terre Haute, Indiana, and we talked with her weekly here on WILL AM 580 in the 1980s, 90s, and 2000s. And we held more than a few Ag Outlook panels in the basement of the grain elevator there at Route 41 and Voorhees Street in Terre Haute. The people of the Wabash Valley will feel the loss of Kay Whitlock. She passed Monday at age 84.
On the banks of the Wabash, far
September corn today finished 4.5 cents lower at $5.92 and a quarter. December at $5.90 down 5 and a quarter. And the March at $5.96 and a quarter, 5 and a quarter lower as well. August soybeans at $14.49, 28 and a quarter cents lower. September down 25 at $13.50 and a half a bushel. And November, the new crop at $13.32 and a quarter, down 26 cents for the day. Bean meal $1.50 higher. The bean oil down $1.86. Wheat futures in the soft red, 8.19 and a half, up 7 and a quarter for the September. The hard red, September, at 8.70 and a half for the wheat, a penny and a quarter higher. Live cattle futures in Chicago at 141.32 and a half, 22 and a half cents higher for the day. The feeders were down 92 and a half cents, and lean hogs were up $1.52 and a half for 100 pounds at $96, 2 and a half cents. Crude oil at $99.40 a barrel, that's down $1.34. The diesel fuel for the day at $3.54 and 2 tenths, 2 and a half cents lower. And the wholesale price of gasoline today down 3 and 7 tenths at $3.13 and a tenth of a cent. Michael Cordonnier now joins us from Soybean and Corn Advisor in Hinsdale, Illinois. You can find him online at soybeansandcorn.com, all spelled out. Michael, thanks for joining us today.
No problem.
Can you give me your overview of the marketplace, please?
Well, of course, the market is very volatile. And everyone is concerned about, you know, the macro issues, you know, inflation, recession, the Russian grain embargo, all that sort of thing. And then we get the complication of what's the U.S. crop production going to be? You know, we had a problematic June weather-wise in the United States. The first week of July was pretty good. A lot of people got some moisture. And then the moisture has just been kind of good enough the last couple of weeks to kind of maintain the status quo. And now we've got these super high temperatures and the forecast for more high temperatures to come, but maybe with some rain, you know, interspersed. So it's real hard for everybody, including myself, to figure out where this crop might be going. I got the corn yield at 177 bushels per acre with a neutral to lower bias. And I thought I'd lower it for the last couple of weeks, but I just hesitated because there was just enough rain to sort of maintain the status quo. And now we see the eastern corn belt might be okay, moisture-wise. The problem is going to be sort of the southern corn belt with very high temperatures, the southwestern areas with very high temperatures. But then you got the state like Iowa. Iowa is the best-rated corn state in the country. And in fact, last Monday, Iowa, Illinois, Minnesota improved their conditions for corn. So you got a real dilemma here. And you got those three big states, Iowa, Illinois, Minnesota, big corn states, if they do okay, that could make up for some of the losses in places like, you know, Missouri and Kansas and Nebraska, maybe Kentucky, Tennessee, Arkansas. So it's a real dilemma, so to speak.
So given conditions on the ground here, what do we know about the corn crop that came out of Brazil? It should be entering the export market.
Yeah, the Safrinha corn in Brazil right now is about 60% harvested. They've had a good crop, you know, much better than last year. But, you know, I'm not quite as optimistic about the corn in Brazil as, say, the USDA. I have the Brazil corn crop, 112 million tons. I think USDA is like 116. They got very dry starting in March and April. And as the harvest is progressing in Brazil, the yields are getting lower and lower. So I think they may reduce their estimates a little bit in the months ahead. Now, this is the time they start exporting corn, of course. Brazil's going to export maybe 43 million tons of corn. Last year was in the low 20s, so it's way bigger than last year. But it may not be quite as big as what was anticipated. Now, speaking about this, the big news this week was that Brazil might export corn to China. Now, they've been working on this deal for a long time. It turns out that they did not have phytosanitary agreements in place to export the current crop to China, because China said these protocols for diseases and insects must be in place as the crop is growing. And the crop they're harvesting right now, those protocols were not in place. Now, they will be in place starting with the summer crop. They're going to start planting in Brazil in August and September. Now, that's the smaller of the two crops in Brazil. Only like 25% of the total corn is the summer crop. Now, they start harvesting that in January and February, but almost all of that is committed to the livestock industry in southern Brazil. So there might be a trickle of Brazil corn going to China in January, February. The bulk of any corn exports from Brazil to China will be next June, July, and August, you know, a year from now, when they harvest the Safrinha corn, which they'll plant, you know, in January and February. So that's kind of big news. You know, China has millions of tons of corn committed to them, but they're still sitting in the ports in Ukraine. And that corn is maybe not going to come out. Who knows? But they look for other sources, and Brazil was a good choice. And Brazil was very glad to do this agreement with China because they wanted to diversify their customer base as well. So it's going to be a win-win for China, Brazil, and kind of a lose for U.S. farmers.
It seems to me that logistically that this makes some sense on the global marketplace for China and the northern and southern hemisphere in general. The United States generally, once we begin our soybean harvest, starts to export that through January. It switches over to South America at some point in the following year. And then we pick up corn exports, and this would allow the Brazilians to do kind of the same thing. Soybeans exported first, followed by corn if it's going to China in 2022-2023 for that crop year, I suppose.
Yeah, since we've got the different seasons opposite sides of the equator, the calendar kind of works out good for both countries. They kind of supplement each other. So in that respect, it works out pretty good. Right now, in fact, I'm just writing a story right now. Most of the corn being harvested in, say, Mato Grosso, Brazil, they're piling it outside because the farmers have been slow sellers of the soybeans. They're waiting for a better price. So a lot of silos still full of soybeans, and now they don't have room for the corn, so they just pile it outside in the open air, which is not much of a problem because this is the peak of the dry season in central Brazil. In fact, in some areas, it hasn't rained for like 3 or 4 months, and it won't rain until sometime in September. So you can stack it outside. And as long as you pick it up before September or so, it should be okay. So, you know, it's the same thing with this logistical problem. Since they harvest crops at different times in Brazil, they can live with less storage than what they should have because you don't have to store everything at the same time.
Are you telling me also that because farmers there have not sold soybean, that it's likely the export market for soybean will be under pressure to get soybeans out of Brazil as we begin our normal marketing season?
They have sold soybeans at a slower pace than average, for sure. Same thing in Argentina. Now, in Argentina, they're slow sellers because it's their hedge against inflation. In Brazil, they're slow sellers because, you know, prices come down and it makes farmers a little bit more hesitant. There have also been slow sellers of their corn they're harvesting right now. So generally, South American farmers have been holding on to more of their crops than normal. In Brazil, because of want a better price, Argentina, because inflation is roaring like 75%.
And finally, can you talk a little bit about the weather, maybe some other sorts of things that have been problems, La Nina in Brazil for 2023? I suppose if there are any yield impacts on corn from leaf hoppers and other sorts of things.
Oh, yeah. In fact, you know, two things here. That corn leaf hopper is a new pest in Brazil. It's been around for like maybe 3, 4, 5 years. It turns out to be a real problem. Now, the little moth itself doesn't cause much problem to the corn, but it carries with it a virus called the maize stunting virus. And that virus is devastating to corn crops. And if you did not control the insect and you had a susceptible hybrid for corn in parts of southern Brazil, you could have lost 50, 60, 70, 80% of your potential corn yield. So it's a big deal in Brazil. Some guys had to spray up to 10 times trying to control the insect. Obviously, the insecticide wasn't very effective if you had to spray that many times. One of the problems is the bug migrates from more mature corn to less mature corn. So, and in places like Paraná, southern Brazil, they got corn growing like 10, 11 months of the year. So there's always a new crop of corn for the insect to migrate to. So one of the things they're recommending, for example, farmers in southern Brazil said, if you're going to plant corn, make sure you plant it in the tightest window possible. So all the corn's at the same maturity, so to speak. And in Mato Grosso, they're telling the farmers, you know, you may don't plant any summer corn. They plant little. And they said, don't plant any because we don't want to have this corn growing all the time in the state. So this is a real issue in Brazil, and it's still trying to figure out how to control it. Now, on and another point is La Nina. It's still out there. It's supposed to start to regenerate a little bit here in October, November, December. If that verifies, there'll be 3 years in a row that the planting season in Brazil is under a La Nina impact, which makes it a little drier to start. So delayed start planting, both corn and soybeans. Now, for soybeans, that doesn't bother me very much at all. You can plant your soybeans late in central Brazil and not have any yield impact at all if the rest of the growing season is okay. Now, they would like to start planting mid-September, but if it's dry, you know, you can delay to October, November, whatever. The big impact will be on Safrinha corn, which they plant after the soybeans are harvested. So if you delay the soybean planting a month or two, then automatically you delay the Safrinha corn planting a month or two, and that's a big problem for corn. And last year, that was really detrimental to the corn crop. They planted it extra late, and then the rainy season ended early, and they had very, very low corn yields. So this will be 3 years in a row that La Nina is in place. And this is very odd, very unusual. I guess since about the 1950s when I started tracking this, this is only like the second or third time we've had three La Ninas in a row. So it's definitely on farmers' radar in Brazil.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
No problem. Anytime.
That's Michael Cordonier. He is with Soybean and Corn Advisor out of Hinsdale, Illinois. You may find him online at soybeansandcorn.com. Let's check the weather forecast now with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'd like to cover the globe to begin with. The hot and dry weather both in the United States and in Europe. Can you give me a quick assessment of those issues?
Yeah, you know, in the U.S., we have had really a very impressive week of heat in the plains and a little bit in the Western Corn Belt. But I want to make sure that everybody is on the right page here. The heat has been primarily a Great Plains phenomenon from Montana to Texas. And if you look at a map with the highest temperatures over the past week, very few temperatures over 95 have occurred in any of the corn and soybean producing areas. The exception would be in eastern Kansas and Missouri and across a small part of southern Illinois and the Delta. Those are the only places that have seen temperatures over 95. Now, it's been warm. Right? We've seen a lot of 90-degree days across some of the Western Corn Belt, but this hasn't been as punishing as I think that you might imagine when you listen to all of the talk about 110 degrees in South Dakota, which, by the way, was in the western half of South Dakota, and 116 degrees down in Oklahoma and Texas, where they don't produce much in the way of significant corn and soybeans relative to the Midwest. So that's really important. The rest of the Midwest temperatures have not been far from ideal. And now in Europe, we have had a little bit more of an issue over there because the dryness in Europe has been a little bit more long-lasting, and the heat that occurred this week was pretty impressive. I mean, several locations in the UK, England in particular, did get up to 104 degrees, and temperatures were running 96 to 104 in general across that part of the UK. And of course, these are temperatures that are unheard of. But I think the bigger story in Europe, because the heat that I just mentioned was really just a one-day event, the bigger story is the lack of moisture across a big part of the European continent, France in particular, but all of the southeast part of Europe, from Hungary and Slovakia all the way down to Greece, including Bulgaria and Romania and Serbia, all those countries are critically short of moisture. And the heat that occurred in Western Europe this week is all slipping into that corner of Europe, and it's going to stay there for 10 days. So there's going to be a lot of problems in southeastern Europe, and southern France is probably not going to see a lot of relief. So a lot of corn, soybeans, and sunseed in the European continent is still going to be under the gun for a while.
Lack of rainfall always puts crops under the gun. What's the forecast here in the Corn Belt over the next 10 days?
Well, the good news is that we do have a little bit of a trend change taking place temporarily. The ridge that's been in the central part of the U.S. is going to abate for a little while. It opens the door for two or maybe three shots of cooler air to come in from Canada in a northwesterly flow pattern aloft, and that will bring in opportunities for rain. And we will probably not see widespread big soakings necessarily, but everybody will get some timely rain. And that's going to support that long-term crop development and help to reinforce the potential for high yields across the region. At the end of the 10-day period, and this 10-day period, by the way, will start probably on Sunday. Once we are at the end of that 10-day period, it'll be the first week of August, and we will probably see the ridge come back into the middle of the country, but it will still stay out of the Midwest, at least the central and eastern Midwest, and so those areas will still be seeing some periodic showers, and it's going to be back to today's conditions, more or less. So the bottom line really doesn't look bad for the majority of the corn and soybean production areas.
Anything in the southern hemisphere that we need to be aware of?
You know, Argentina has been in a drought of sorts for the last several weeks. Their winter wheat and barley normally is planted in June, and it was planted, but it wasn't planted very well. There wasn't any moisture for some of the crop to germinate and emerge with. Stands are poor. There's even some crop is still waiting for moisture to germinate. There is an opportunity for rain to devolve from two weather systems next week, one early in the week and one late in the week. And between the two, we will probably moisten up the topsoil just enough to get some germination and emergence to occur and a little bit of improvement. But Argentina will still need to have follow-up rain routinely for a while in order to get that crop established before they get into spring growth, into spring growing season.
Hey, thank you very much.
You bet. And have a great day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Let's talk a little bit about the cash grain situation now. Greg Johnson joins us from TGM here in Champaign County, Illinois. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com. Hi, Greg. Thanks for being with us. We're in that part of the season where the old crop bids begin to roll forward. Can you tell me what's likely to happen?
Yeah, we're seeing a little bit of that already in the old crop beans this week. Old crop beans are worth $2 more than new crop beans. And as you can expect, the processors and end users don't want to pay $2 more for any more bushels than what they absolutely have to. So once they think they have some of their needs covered, we'll probably start to see those old crop basis levels weaken as we get closer and closer to the new crop harvest, which is now only 6, 7, 8 weeks away. And the other thing we will see in soybeans especially is they will stop bidding versus the August futures as we get here closer to the end of the month, and skip right over the September and start bidding versus the November futures. So they'll have a bid $1.50 higher for their old crop bean bid on the November versus the new crop bid versus the November. And like I say, every week that goes by, as they think they've got enough coverage, we could see that basis continue to slip because they don't want to pay that $1.50 premium on any more bushels than they have to. So, yep, it's that time of year where you'll start to see basis levels slip. And if you still have old crop corn or beans unpriced, it might be a good idea to get the basis locked in on that, even if you don't want to sell because you think the futures price is going to go higher. You might want to get the basis locked in at least.
Yeah, because the basis has been very, very strong. You could lock it in and then make a decision as to the futures price that you want to market at when it arrives.
Yep, exactly. That's assuming you're bullish, the futures price. <yes. laughs>
Or you could just sell.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
For new crop, what's been happening for both corn and soybean?
We have still bought very little. I know I sound like a broken record, but the farmers got sold too heavily last year and then watch the price go up. And so they've kind of made a decision not to do that same thing this year. And it's not just the fact that they sold too much last year. It's also the fact that here in East Central Illinois, we've been on the dry side. It was the third driest June. We had less than an inch of rain at the Illinois State Water Survey, the official measuring spot in Champaign. So it's been extremely dry in parts of East Central Illinois. So that's another reason why they haven't sold as much new crop corn. The expenses are a lot higher. That's another reason given for them not wanting to sell. They think they need, have to get more money to pay for the higher input costs. So it's a combination of things. But the bottom line is we just have not bought very much new crop corn yet, and I don't know when that changes. Maybe once we get through pollination, if everything looks decent, maybe then we'll see a little bit more selling going on, but we have not seen very much yet.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson. He is with TGM, Total Grain Marketing. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online at willag.org, willag.org for you to listen to on demand anytime you'd like, or just search us out in your favorite podcast applications, places like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Audible as well, or you can just ask Alexa or Google, if you happen to be subscribed to the podcast, to play them on your home hubs. Thanks for listening on this Wednesday. Our theme music, by the way, is produced and performed in courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.